On the campaign trail, Donald Trump promised to bring back manufacturing jobs. But according to the job search site Indeed, manufacturing jobs are at an all-time low, 8.5% compared to 30% in the 1950s, which made us think of traditional lunch-pail working-class men. Here are some of the headlines. An Atlantic piece is titled "The End of Men" and asks, what if modern post-industrial society is simply better suited to women? Betsy Stevenson wrote in Bloomberg, manly men need to do more girly jobs. The Boston Globe piece was titled "The End of Manly Labor." Lance Coppa is a professor at Cornell University School of Industrial and Labor Relations. He joins us by Skype. Lance, which headline do you prefer? Manly labor is dead, or men just need to take jobs that were traditionally for women, like nursing jobs? Or is it just their tough luck right now that historically they had the jobs and now women are better suited for the jobs that there are?
No, I don't agree with any of those. The death of manufacturing is greatly exaggerated. You know, it's true that it's declined as a share, as a percentage of the overall economy and as a percentage of the labor force. But there are still 12 million manufacturing jobs in the United States. You drive along the interstate highways and you'll see big manufacturing facilities all over the country. The other thing is that at any given moment in time, including right now, I just looked it up, there are 300,000 openings in manufacturing, job openings for applicants. And the manufacturing sector is actually doing quite well and could do even better if the plans for infrastructure improvements come into place.
Well, everybody's hoping that. But what are we missing then? Because we read also that of the 227,000 new jobs created in January, only 5,000 were in manufacturing. You're saying that they're there already. So what's the disconnect? You have voters who said that they, you know, were out of work and they were counting on Donald Trump to bring work back, and you have job openings.
You know, I mean, I don't want to exaggerate it in the other direction either. The thing is, there's a skills match that needs to be achieved. My own background is an example. When I was growing up in Rochester, New York, 50,000 people worked for Eastman Kodak.
Yep.
Now it's about 1,000. Does that mean that 49,000 people went out on the street with nothing? No. In fact, the engineers and other people that had worked for Kodak started up dozens and dozens of smaller specialized companies, and they hire a lot of people. Those jobs in manufacturing can be there, but you can't just walk out of high school with a high school degree and nothing else and get a good manufacturing job. There is a skills need, and it doesn't mean they have to be licensed electricians or plumbers or something. There are a lot of men, working class men, who they don't have a knack for school, say, the patience to sit down, and they don't do standardized tests well. But they're smart and they're resourceful, and they can find careers in these niche manufacturing markets, I think.
Well, here you come to what seems like another disconnect, because while Donald Trump is saying, I'm going to bring back these, you know, we're going to pour steel, you know, we're hearing from people, well, you're probably not, because it's done so much cheaper in other countries. And people who work with steel, we've been talking to pipeline makers, they buy it in bulk from other countries and then they work with it. But the Democrats have always said, we're going to retrain, that people need to be retrained. You talk about there's skilled jobs that are available. And, you know, we hear from so many, including Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan, who spoke to NPR, and he said, you know, my people don't want to get retrained. They don't want to run a computer. As you said, some people just aren't great in school. I know and love many of them. As Tim Ryan said, they want to run a backhoe. They want to build things. They want to get their hands on things. Are those jobs there?
I think they are. I mean, I don't want to paint a completely rosy scenario that, oh, yeah, no problem, nothing to worry about. There's plenty to worry about. But I think that working class men who, you know, don't have the bent for high tech or advanced education and so on. First of all, there's a lot of jobs in manufacturing still out there. There's a whole cohort of baby boom workers in manufacturing that are going to be leaving their jobs in the next few years. That's going to create lots of openings. There's also a whole sector of what's come to be called logistics, truck driving, retail deliveries, warehouse work. These are actually millions of jobs. They're not counted as manufacturing because they come under materials handling and transportation, you know, for the truck drivers and so on. But these are millions of jobs that working class men and women, too, they can do without particularly advanced education or high technical training. The point is, they need to be good jobs, not lousy jobs. Right now, those jobs are paying $10, $12, $14 an hour. They should be getting $20 or $25 an hour for those jobs. And that requires, I think, more attention to the right to organize trade unions and to bargain collectively. I think that's got to be the way to advance wages and conditions in these other sectors that, in fact, do employ millions of working class men.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because that's exactly the opposite of what the Republicans and President Trump say. They believe that it's the other direction that leads back to jobs, away from unions, away from collective bargaining, that frees up business to hire more people, but maybe at a lesser wage.
No, I don't accept that. History teaches a very valuable lesson that wages and working conditions advance when workers' right to organize and bargain collectively is itself advanced and protected.
Yeah, you've also been quoted as saying that some of the issues that Democrats push, raising the minimum wage, improving family leave, this group of, and I'm saying men because it has traditionally been men, who's, you know, for several generations, they've lifted things, they've moved things. They, you know, the pride in their bodies and the dignity of putting a roof over the heads of their families and feeding their families through their sweat has been passed down for generations. And you've said that for them, those are more of new working class issues. What do you mean by that?
Well, take the minimum wage, for example. I think it's vitally important to increase the minimum wage around the country. And we see it being done all over the country at state and local levels. We still need a substantial increase in the federal minimum wage. But for a lot of working class men, working at a minimum wage job is insulting. And family leave is important, but there are still a lot of people in traditional family settings, and it might be great, you know, if the woman in the relationship or one woman in the relationship can get time off and so on. But the men are interested in, like, going out to work to support their family. You know, I think that has to be recognized. And again, it comes down to making the jobs that working class men can now get into. And, you know, it's a good thing that it's not all heavy labor. In fact, working class men call it bull work. You know, there's not so much bull work anymore. And that's a good thing. And I think working class men, you know, need to get over some of the hang-ups and the traditionalist notions and be ready to go into caring professions. You know, there are a lot of jobs in nursing homes and care facilities and hospitals that actually do require a lot of physical strength.
I'm looking at a picture of the great artwork from the WPA, the Works Progress Administration, when, you know, out of work, unemployed men were put to work on all these building projects. There's this beautiful mural by Seymour Fogel. It's called The Wealth of the Nation. I'm sure you've seen it. And you see, you know, there's a man, they're all men, obviously, 1930s. Mm-hmm. There's a man kneeling and looking at a blueprint, and there's another looking through a microscope. But there's a man with a sledgehammer over his brawny shoulder and another with his work pail and another his brawny arms, you know, the muscles exposed as he pulls a lever on some, you know, on some machinery. You know, look, I can see somebody who has worked in labor for years listening to us and saying, what are you, crazy? I don't miss that at all. But we're not romanticizing this. There is a group of men who very much love that, you know, physical. You know, they don't want it to be streamlined, right? This group that really does want to do hard, sweaty labor.
I don't know about the hard, sweaty part. I mean, they're, you know, I don't accept that there are all these guys out there that, you know, want to swing a sledgehammer. There might be some, but if the only, I mean, it would be a terrible thing, I think, if there were millions of opportunities for men to swing sledgehammers. It's just not going to happen. This vision that Donald Trump has of bringing back the steel mill that employs 30,000 people is completely ridiculous.
It may be a romanticizing of that swinging the sledgehammer by people who've never done it.
Yeah, I think there's probably some of that. The thing is, I mean, I'm happy that the sledgehammer jobs aren't there anymore because, for one thing, bodies would break down. You know, the working class men who are strong in their 20s and 30s, their bodies would break down by the time they're in their 40s. And then you're talking about disability and Social Security.
And a complete loss of dignity.
Yeah.
That's Lance Kampa, a professor at Cornell University School of Industrial and Labor Relations. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Happy to join you today.